Welcome to the AAAS podcast. We're interviewing Nina Fedoroff, the new president of AAAS.
My priority, which, remember, the AAAS is a complex organization, and the president is just a part of it. But one of the things that I will focus on is encouraging AAAS to become more international. AAAS is a unique organization in the sense that it is an organization that includes scientists from the most sophisticated to science teachers and the science students. I think that this is a wonderful interface between science and society, and this is something that is important throughout the world. So getting more involved with other countries and the science establishment, I think, is one of the things that will be a high priority for me, including for the 2012 meeting.
Okay. And by the science establishment in these other countries, do you mean sort of in the same way that AAAS does? Do you mean the scientists themselves and research institutions, or science education in those countries, or how do you see that?
I think it's everything from basic science to science education. I think that it's important. The world is facing truly global problems that do not respect political boundaries or political positions. So it's never been more important for scientists to work together on the big issues confronting the world. Water, food, energy, you name it, and all the periphery of social problems and economic problems that find that surround that particular nexus of food, energy, and water.
For us in the United States, and it does have an effect across the world, one of the most important changes for American scientists, at least, is going to be the convening of the new Congress next year. What impacts do you expect on science as a result of this, particularly on pressures to cut the overall budget and discretionary spending that affects, as you know, just not American scientists, but their collaborations all across the world?
It's hard to predict. I think that some parts of science will do very well and other parts will not do so well. I think that President Obama really has science as a high priority, and I think he's going to do his best to make sure that our country invests science, but as you know, the budget situation is pretty difficult, and the fraction of the budget that's discretionary is pretty small. The American public does see the deficit as a high priority, reducing the deficit. On the other hand, the American public is averse to cutting any of the entitlements. So in that paradoxical environment, it's hard to tell what exactly will happen.
Are there any? You said there will be some that will do well, and some that aren't, that won't. Would you like to predict who that would be, or is it something that you're just not sure how it will shake out yet?
Oh, I think that the targeted programs will do well. I think that our focus on energy will not disappear. I think there will be substantial money that goes into the issues surrounding climate change. But I think basic science probably will not, the budget for basic science probably won't expand a whole lot.
One of the other things
although I have to say that I hope I'm wrong about the basic science.
One of the other things that will happen, some analysts and some members of Congress have suggested that particularly in the House of Representatives, there'll be hearings about things like the science of climate change and manipulation of climate data and things like that. If these hearings do happen, how should organizations like AAAS and just scientists in general respond?
I think it's really important for scientists not represented by AAAS or representing AAAS or representing themselves to be on the scene as much as possible. Climate change is not something that we argue about anymore in the scientific community. And some of our champions of science are retiring from Congress, and I think it's going to be even harder and even more important for scientists to come to Washington and make themselves heard.
And how are some of the ways that scientists should do that? I mean, if you are a climate scientist, or even if you're not, that you know, as a member of the scientific community, you feel like these questions have been resolved by scientists, or the basic facts of climate change. How would you suggest that scientists get involved?
I think they have to come, they have to testify, they have to read, they have to write, they have to lecture, anything that they can do to get the message across to the public. That means appearing on television programs whenever they're called. I would hope that AAAS would be more active in seeking opportunities, both for publication in the popular press and as well as in for appearances in Congress.
So, I know that you came to your role as science advisor in the State Department after collaborations that you had with researchers in the former Soviet Union in the 1990s. Can you tell us a little bit more about how you began those collaborations and why you thought they were important, sort of how you got on the road to seeing science as part of diplomacy?
Actually, I didn't have collaborations so much as I had professional relationships with scientists. So the way I got involved in it was simply because I speak Russian and I would attend conferences, particularly at Cold Spring Harbor, where Russian scientists would come. This was before the fall of the Soviet Union, and I got to know some of them. In due time, I was asked, on the one hand, to play an advisory role to the Molecular Biology Institute in Moscow that was then headed by an extraordinary scientist by the name of Andrei Mirzabekov, who contributed significantly to the development of our contemporary sequencing technology. But on the other hand, I also was drawn into the organization of the International Science Foundation, which is the foundation that George Soros created in the immediate wake of the fall of the Soviet Union.
And sort of through those experiences, what did you come to see about science as a way of, I guess, crossing borders, or sort of, is there something special about science that you think is a boon to diplomacy? What is it about science that makes it a natural for crossing borders?
It establishes relationships that have science as their base. Science, the language of science is one language. It is evidence-based exploration of nature. It doesn't matter what language the science is done in, the criteria of excellence are really the same. That is solid evidence. That makes it possible for scientists of many political persuasions, of many religious persuasions, to talk to each other. And I think that where the importance lies is in jumping the gap between countries that are well advanced in science and countries that are not. So many, many years ago, I helped one Russian individual get plant molecular biology started in the former Soviet Union. I also had the same kind of catalytic role through a postdoctoral fellow from Brazil, who came to my laboratory and took plant molecular biology back to Brazil and is now one of those leading plant molecular biologists there. So it's a way of establishing relationships in fields and making fields grow and prosper. But today, I think the importance is twofold. One, as I mentioned earlier, collaboratively attacking the big problems of the world. But second, again, it's Everybody seeks to be a knowledge society today, and I think that one of the most important things that scientists can do is to participate in making connections with scientists in less developed countries to provide know-how, collaboration, and sometimes even material.
And along those lines, are there any particular programs in science diplomacy, or maybe even regions of the world that you think should become a focus for AAAS and its science diplomacy initiatives?
Well, it's actually harboring to. If there is a Center for Science Diplomacy that is headed by Yvonne Tarikian. And in addition, a small organization that I helped start, the Global Knowledge Initiative, is now located at AAAS. The Global Knowledge Initiative seeks to make those kinds of partnerships between individuals in more developed and less developed countries, right now focusing on U.S. and Africa. Let me say one more thing. I think that in my experience in the State Department, I found that there were only the Department of State has science and technology agreements with many countries, but only two of them have funding behind those agreements. And one of them is Pakistan. And I will tell you that I was extremely pleasantly surprised when I traveled to Islamabad to bring together the principal investigators of these projects, some of whom had only communicated by email. I was surprised at how wonderful the science was and how important it was in bringing both science and technology that wasn't in Islamabad, I mean, it wasn't in Pakistan yet, to Pakistan, such as telemedicine, as well as contemporary agricultural science.
Okay. And that was the first time many of them had met face-to-face.
Yep. That's interesting. So the internet makes it possible for people to work together without ever meeting. They can talk in person by Skype and by video conferencing of other kinds. But the point is that it's never been more possible to work between countries and continents in real time on real world problems.
They're beyond science diplomacy and beyond sort of working in that way, are there other roles in public life that you think scientists should occupy? Are there places where scientists should be more visible but maybe are not? And this could be education, or it could be in popular culture, or just your feelings about that.
Yeah, I think there is a role, and it's an important role, just to communicate the fun of science. At Penn State, my home university, we have a Frontiers of Science program that brings in people from the community to our lectures on Saturday mornings once a month for several months. It presents astronomy, the emerging infectious diseases, water issues, all kinds of contemporary issues, and brings together scientists with people who are not scientists, but who are curious about what scientists have to say. I think that's something that many communities are doing, and I think it's enormously important. Another important area is for scientists in research universities to reach out to high school, middle school, and elementary school teachers to help them understand state-of-the-art science and teach it.
So is it, you talk about the fun of science. Are there other things that the public, you think, doesn't know about scientists or science that they should? Is there something that you think that most people, even if they're curious about science, don't really know about it, that you think would maybe sort of enhance the relationship between scientists and the public or make science more enjoyable?
I think the fun and excitement of science, communicating that is really important. But I think that one of the things that often escapes people who are not trained as scientists is how scientists work, and that is by carefully constructing evidence and testing hypotheses. Often I find that people who are in government service or politics or business don't understand that science isn't just another point of view or opinion. So that what is sometimes very frustrating for a scientist is that the most weighty thing that one can say, if you'll pardon the pun, is that the weight of the evidence says such and such. So the weight of the evidence is hugely on the side of the reality of climate change and of the fact that it is largely anthropogenic. The arguments in Congress, the arguments in the press, treat minor disagreements, arguments, and so forth as evidence that it's not a foregone conclusion, that it's not solidly established. And I think that concept of very high confidence is not something that people easily understand.
Is there any particular program, or is there any way that you think AAAS could sort of enhance that understanding? I mean, AAAS has a Center for Public Engagement in Science, as I'm sure you know. And are there other things that AAAS could do to sort of bridge that gap in people's understanding?
I think that there's lots of room for better science programming on television, but that's a huge undertaking, and whether AAAS wants to do that, I don't know.
In terms of speaking with the public, you're certainly no stranger to talking about science that has raised controversies, especially talking about genetic modified organisms and things like that. What has your experience there taught you about how to discuss issues in science that may seem controversial or politically charged? I mean, you talk about the weightiness, the weight of evidence, and how scientists actually do the work. Are there other lessons that you've learned from your work and your book and talking about these things with people?
I think the two lessons are being very calm, because when people get emotional, they stop being persuasive, first. And second, it's really important to uncover the weaknesses of the counter-arguments. There are people in the public media today who collect bits and pieces of the worst science around, construct a case, a worst-case scenario, and then go out and sell it. I think it's really important to get the message across that this technology is fantastically important to everybody on the planet, and that after all this time, there is zero evidence that it's dangerous. So getting those messages across patiently, calmly, is what I've learned. That is how important it is to be patient and calm about it.
Okay. Well, I only have a couple more questions. So one of the ones that I wanted to ask is that we've talked a lot about AAAS's service to the public, and that's certainly a huge part of what AAAS's mission does. But AAAS has member scientists from all sorts of scientific disciplines, and I'm wondering if you think there's some service that all scientists could use more of that AAAS might take a stronger role in providing for them. It could be something, that the AAAS scrutinizes programs in Congress and watches the budget process and sort of let scientists know more about that. But is there something that you think that AAAS could do more of as a service to their members?
I think the biggest challenge is reorganizing how we publish data, and in a form that will survive. We don't have a very good mechanism for publication. It's a little bit antiquated, and I think that Science Magazine is moving in that direction of kind of reinventing how data is accessed.
I think
I think that's the biggest service that AAAS performs for active scientists.
Do you mean making more things, do you mean making things more available online? Do you mean making original databases more accessible? What kind of things are you thinking about?
The problem is that there's so much information that it's extremely difficult to have enough time to read stuff in great detail online. So layering how information is accessed. We now have kind of in-depth articles, and then we have thumbnail sketches. But how do we create a situation in which the information can be accessed at different levels of resolution, of different levels of detail? I think that's a process, evolving process, and I suspect that we are not yet using the strength of the internet and digital information as well as we could.
That's interesting. I wasn't really sure what you would answer with that, but that wasn't something that I thought of, so that's interesting.
Well, I think that what people don't understand is that much as one would like to be able to keep on top of everything, it's virtually impossible.
Mm-hmm.
And yet we don't have really good mechanisms for surveying across science at a reasonable level of brevity, but in enough detail to get the point, to get the message. It's either too brief or too long.
And that's got to be a problem, particularly since so much of science is multidisciplinary now, just to keep up with your own, what you would consider your field literature, that you're missing out on so much.
Indeed.
And I guess the last thing that I wanted to ask is this, what you're doing now, was this sort of your vision for your life in science when you started out? Did you see yourself doing these kinds of things when you started your science education and your research? Are you?
I'm not quite sure what you're referring to. Are you referring to what I'm doing here in Saudi Arabia?
Well, in general, you've become, your work in the State Department, and your role as sort of an international ambassador for science, and even becoming president of AAAS and taking a role more in policy and things like that, more than being just a researcher. Is that what you thought you might want to do with your science career when you started as a scientist?
I had no idea, but it gradually evolved. I took opportunities to participate in, I was invited as one of the first plant molecular biologists, I was invited to sit on committees in Washington. I was then located in Baltimore. And those opportunities gave me a much wider view of what was going on in science. And as time went by, I remember sitting in my study in, 20, 25 years ago, and wishing that I could have a larger voice. And so at some level, I think I must have gone in that direction. I think I wrote my first New York Times op-ed piece in the 80s. So I just have taken the opportunities that have come along, and I'm delighted to have had a larger voice, because I think that one's accomplishments, one 15 minutes of fame, needs to be put to good use, and I can't think of a better use than communicating about science.
Okay. Well, that's all the questions I had for you. Is there anything else about your presidency or anything else in particular about AAAS that you'd like me to convey in this article?
Well, I think that many people don't know that AAAS has many faces and does many things. And I didn't know until I served on the board many years ago. I think it's a very special organization. I think it's an organization that is constantly evolving and addressing important problems, and I hope I will have a chance to communicate in a broader sense about what AAAS is and does.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you very much, Dr. Fedoroff. I really appreciate you taking the time out and across all the time zones and everything.